Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight's show is going to be another, hopefully, great show dealing with metaphysics and spirituality and science and, well, different areas of why life is. And I thought tonight I would speak about principles of natural health. Tomorrow I'm going to give a kind of seminar workshop over at Healthy... What is it? I got to get that name again. Healthy Habit Health Foods. Got to get the HHH in there. Healthy Habit Health Foods. I'll be speaking there at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, of course. And I thought tonight would be a good night to talk about some of the principles, because some of the things I'm going to say tonight will not be in that seminar. The reason being that those people that will be hearing me tomorrow might likely be hearing me for the first time, some of them anyway. Some of you out there may come, and that's great. However, you know, with the number they expect, I think it'll be probably people who are more familiar with the store than they are with me, and more familiar with these seminars that are occasionally given. So, at any rate, I thought it would be better tonight to cover some of the things that I won't necessarily be covering tomorrow, although, who knows? Someone asks the right question, they might get us off into this direction. So what do I mean by principles of natural health? Well, there's certain guiding principles that affect the way we either are or are not healthy. And possibly the very first principle is that energy follows thought that is greater than the thought of the entire element of energy itself in that person's body. And what do I mean by the thought of energy? The best way to describe that is think of it as gravity, because most energy doesn't have much thought. And so whatever thought it is, it's the idea that it wants to get bigger. It wants to get connected with other energy and connect and be part of that other energy as well. And so similar kinds of energy oftentimes gravitate towards each other, and as a result of that, they produce what we call gravity, which is the effect or force that is produced by the amount of gravity that is in time-space. If you took energy and you removed it from time-space, there would not be any effect of gravity. Now, what does gravity do? Well, it causes time to slow down, and it causes the space to become distorted. And it actually, there's a thing called dilation of time. And the distortion of space moves the space in the direction that the gravity is seeking to move towards. And that's caused by other gravity that may be around it, or other forms of matter, which is a dense form of gravity, by the way, that the gravity may tend towards. So let's think about this in terms, let's say you have a big bowling ball, okay, you have a bowling ball. And the bowling ball, you know, is a pretty dense object for its size. And it's in space and in time. Well, space and time are kind of joined together in one thing. Well, the one thing it tends to do, the bowling ball, is it tends to slow down the time by separating the time from space to some extent. And it causes a dimple. Think of it as a dimple in the space, because the bowling ball is attracted to other forms, other energy around it. And the direction that it's most attracted to, which is the area where the most amount of other energy is around it, is the direction it wants to move in, then that kind of produces this unusual effect of like a dimple in the space. And that's the reason things orbit around other things, is because they're attracted to the larger dimple of the bigger things, and they want to move towards that. And the only reason they don't fall into them is if they're orbiting, their speed, which is an energy that is moving in a direction usually tangential to the energy that is pulling on it, and that they're mutually pulling on each other, this is causing it not to do that. It's kind of an interesting idea. So if you were to take energy and constantly push it away from the energy that it naturally is attracted to, you end up with a kind of elliptical orbit. Now you can say, well, isn't it circular? Not exactly. That's a whole other complicated equation. But because both objects actually have a spherical surface to them, in most cases, and because one is larger than the other, that produces an ellipse rather than a circle when you do the math and when you look at the way things move around other things. It is possible if you have identical, exactly identical spheres, that you might end up with a truly circular orbit, but that's a whole other issue. Okay, so we're way off already, and you might say, from thinking about energy following thought, but let me try to explain this. Thought, which is an actual thing, it's hard to understand that thought is an actual thing, but it is a thing. Thought has an effect of either improving the amount that time joins with space, and if it does that, then it counteracts gravity, because when the space and time are joined together, the dimple that the energy causes is reduced, and therefore the effects of what we call gravity are reduced. It's kind of like, it's an interesting thing about physics. Now, of course, we are talking about physics right now. We're not talking about metaphysics. Everything I've said so far is really about physics. And so this is a kind of interesting thought, that that thought itself has a very, very small, in the physical world, effect on things, on gravity, which is caused by energy or matter. Matter is just a dense form of energy, and very dense. And so this is, and they're interchangeable, as Albert Einstein proved. So the interesting thing about this is that the thought, if it gets strong enough, and it has to be pretty darn strong, okay? And the only way it can ever get that strong is to be in the direction of our Creator's thought. So thought that is virtuous or in the direction of our Creator's thought that involves energy in some way, or we could say even spiritual if it didn't involve any energy. But regardless, virtuous or spiritual thought causes energy to more likely follow it than not. And the more thought someone has, or something has, and the more it's in the direction of the Creator, the more spiritual and or virtuous it is, then the more it has an effect on this part of energy that we call gravity. And the more it causes gravity not to gravitate, not to want to form a bond with other energies and just want to get bigger and stick in one spot if it can and become more inertial driven, which means that it doesn't want to move very easily. And once it does move, it doesn't want to change the direction of its movement. Wow. All that's going on. And this is all physics, except for the concept, which is not in physics, but in part of metaphysics, that energy is actually affected by thought. Although, if we go back in time to a guy named Werner Heisenberg. Now, Heisenberg pretty much discovered, and then several other people, other famous physicists, went on to, in some experiments, prove that energy is affected by and does follow thought. Wow. Sometimes it does the opposite of what you would think because, again, if the thought is not in alignment with the thought of God or our Creator, then it tends to it may increase its gravitational issues, making it want to just bunch up and buddy along with all the other energy that's around it. Now, how does that affect us in terms of health? Because we're talking about principles of natural health, and I said this is like the primary principle that controls health, right? It's the thing, the biggie thing that makes health in people either be good or bad. But how come? And here's the answer, which is kind of going to sound familiar to some people, but others might say, whoa, I've never heard that before. And it goes something like this. If a person's thought is focused on themselves, the energy that they take in through their senses, because the way senses work is they are the better energies in the field that they exist in, which is usually a body, and better quality of energy. The thought of the energies themselves is stronger than most other energies. So senses are sort of like at the high end of what forms can be in our bodies. They're really advanced kinds of energies. Well, these advanced kinds of energies are cracked on their thought, the little bits, tiny fractions of the energy of anything else around them. And then when they bring this energy in, we have mechanisms that's part of the whole form of our body that is able to discern what that energy is like in comparison to the energy that brought it in. It gives us a sense. So senses are very mechanical in a sense. I guess pun intended there. And they have they work on the same principle of energy following thought greater than its own. And that's one of the proofs that they do, is there's no other way to explain how a sense actually works than that. And actually, in biology, that's how biologists, without the physics that I'm explaining it, describe a sense. They say, yeah, a sense is something that receives energy from the outside. They say receive, but they never explain, well, how does that happen? You know, they they don't quite deal with it at that level of why. But that's okay. They don't deal with the full concept, but they do have the general idea. And so this is in agreement now with another part of science, which is the biological science. All right, so here's the problem. If the senses, which are directed by our personality, it's more or less our subconscious part of us. So we're not conscious of our senses working. Our personality, which is the subconscious part, is kind of in charge of that. The subconscious part of us says to a sense, okay, I want you guys to be focused here and there and et cetera, and the senses are doing it. We're not even most of the time aware of our own senses, because they're mostly subconsciously controlled. Once the sense is focused on whatever it's focusing on, and it brings energy into us, that energy is then converted, by the comparison that I spoke about a few minutes ago, into information. That's a really good thing. And we want to have the information. If the information is focused on a way that is self-focused, it's really about us, how it's going to help us, how it's going to make us feel good, improve this or that about our life. If it's any of those things, which I will call selfish because it's self-focused, then that energy has less of the creator's thought guiding it, much more of our personality's thought guiding it. And the probability is that energy will tend to slow down and stay within us. Okay? Stays within us. Well, one of the problems about energy staying within us is a thing called life energy. There's a kind of energy. It's the first kind of kundalini energy. Now, that's a fancy word. We're just called saying life energy, which you may have been familiar with. It's called chi. That's one name for it. If you want to know the Sanskrit word, it is pingala. But that's probably more than we need to know for tonight. But anyway, this chi energy comes into us, and the way it creates life is the following. Unlike the energy that is just a pure sense, and that's giving us information about our environment, this life energy is revitalizing the physical and conscious parts of us, keeping those two somewhat in balance, and providing the major senses we have with the abilities to continue to act or function at a very high level. So qi energy really kind of keeps us tuned up, and another way to say it is it gives us a heightened way of being aware on a consistent level. If you were to block qi energy for any significant amount of time, consequently, you would lose, we would lose, our ability to sense would decline, our ability to be informed, that's not a good thing. But the most important part of it is what I said first, which is the ability to join the spirit inside of us and keep it connected with the energy. So the spirit and the energy start to separate. And the energy starts doing its own thing on its own, and the spirit is kind of lost because it doesn't have any awareness, because the spirit requires and relies upon the energy to provide its sense. Spirit without sense is like senseless, and senseless spirit is of no value in life. So this life energy keeps us having value and meaning to life by joining spirit with form or energy and keeping those two in relative balance, which is very important. Qi energy is therefore the energy of life itself. It keeps us alive. It makes us able to adapt and to challenge the world around us, to take the challenges from the world and the stresses of it, and to do so without costing us our lives or reducing our ability to live. So qi is really important. I hope you're getting that. Now, here's what happens when you're self-focused. This energy that is being brought into our system all the time from our awareness has got to be managed in a way so that it is flowing through our body and being used to construct information. Well, that just makes sense, right? And the qi energy has to keep the spirit part of us, we'll call the consciousness part of us, connected, our self connected, with our personality and form nature. So those are in relative balance to each other. And the energy that is brought into our system for information flows from the information centers into the personality and then freely into the self, our conscious side, so we can use it to be more virtuous. That's the whole perfect system right there. A lot of people, though, are selfish. So what happens if you're selfish? Well, it really screws the system up. The qi energy, which is supposed to be doing all this balancing and joining, becomes blocked. And it becomes blocked by, first of all, our own self-focus. So it kind of slows it up, and sometimes it can completely stop it. But worse than that, we get areas called in what are called the minor and major centers of our body, chakras for people who are familiar with the major centers. And the minor centers are just usually called minor centers. There's hundreds of those. Clogged up with energy coming in from the various senses, and that cannot be held just in the sense center, but has to be kind of packed away somewhere because it isn't being used for God's plan. It isn't being used for spirit. And so it really doesn't have any place to go. And it's being held there because we're thinking only of ourselves, but we can't immediately use it because when you're self-focused, your thought slows down. Your ability to be able to use the energy declines tremendously. And you're kind of stuck with all this energy in you and no place to do much with it. And then you have the further compounding factor that chi energy is supposed to be balancing everything also slows down. Sometimes it can virtually stop. And that's really, really bad. So now you got two kinds of energy getting stuck in various places. The chi energy is almost like a glue holding the information energy that's coming in from the sensors into various parts of our system, bodies. Usually that, by definition, are the least important areas first, because this immediately causes destruction, and it moves our cells and all of our bodily functionings into slowdown and death rate kinds of activities. Death kinds of activities, essentially death rate, but sort of a rate of slowing down to the point where we're approaching losing cells, losing our ability to maintain ourselves with health. Okay. All that to get there. But as you can see, this is a kind of understandable system. So if we think in ways that are self-focused, that are selfish, we create over time, although it may not be noticeable for months or years, large pockets of energy, both this informational energy and the chi energies together, that causes destruction to our form, to our bodies. It happens in our physical, etheric physical body. It happens in our astral body, in our mental body, and it causes very bad diseases over time. And we think it's usually, in Western society, we think it's coming because we got infected by something, or we had an accident occur, or whatever. Now, the accidents, by the way, are not accidents. They're just the result of our failing sense caused by using our senses in bad ways. Every time we clog up more energy, the sense that center is connected to diminishes. The minor centers diminish, and eventually the major centers diminish, and our senses just diminish. Ooh. And then we have accidents, because we have diminished sense. But there's another side to this. We also have accidents because the chi energy, which helps us to remain conscious, is also getting stuck. And so not only does our awareness drop, but our consciousness drops as well. So not only are we relatively senseless, we're not even conscious of the senselessness, and we're not very conscious about what's going on around us, so we can make really bad mistakes then. Anything from car accidents to falling downstairs to just cutting your finger, or literally unable to do things that people do all the time without hurting themselves or others. So these are all principles of natural health. And these principles, which are all based upon energy following thought greater than its own, is a kind of fundamental reason that we don't maintain our health. It's also the reason that we age. Now, how is that for a kicker? Not only are we likely to lose our senses and become ill, but the very fact that we age is also part of the process. Now, I know some of you out there may be biologists, and you might be saying, yeah, but don't cells have like a 50-cycle life expectancy? And then, you know, if you don't have the right kind of additional cells to help make the process go backwards, you're stuck. And those cells have to do with cells that can easily become any other cell. And if you don't, you eventually run out of them. And when you run out of them, you're really on the decline in aging. You might say, well, isn't that the truth? Isn't it just a biological, mechanical thing, and people are going to age no matter what? The answer to that is no. But it's so hidden that the aging is related to our state of spiritual, we'll say, functioning, that most people don't realize it. and because so many people are so selfish collectively, they seem to grow older together. But in reality, the aging factor is a function of this process that I've described to you. If someone maintained their chi levels at the same level as when they were young, and if their focus of thought was to serve others and to do so at higher and higher and more responsible levels, they would not age. I know, that's hard to believe. Now you might say, well, but can't we, the name of the cells is stem cells. There's two different kinds. There's the child kind, and then there's the adult stem cells. But in either case, these stem cells do run out. And then when they run out, we're running into permanent disability if we've destroyed enough cells in our body. Regardless of whether they do or don't run out, we're still losing sense and we're still losing consciousness if we're self-focused. And that is really what tonight's show needs to be in big time an understanding about. Yes, we will talk about other ways to stay healthy and to do things, but the bottom line is you can't be healthy if you aren't focused out. Now, let me go on with this concept of focusing out. Focusing out is a relative concept. It's relative to the person's ability to serve others. So someone who has greater ability, because they're maybe in a spiritual group, maybe people are teaching them, maybe they've read a bunch of stuff, maybe they've already learned how at times to serve, and if they choose not to, then they will get sick, where others who may be even more selfish don't have the development of their self, then those people may stay well much longer and apparently with less distress from their own selfishness. So it's based upon one's ability to respond and how, therefore, someone is or is not responsible. Responsible, I like that word. But so you can see that this can fool us. That someone who is maybe extremely selfish might appear at a particular time to be healthier than people who aren't. But again, it's relative to their level of service and that ability in comparison to the amount that they're selfish, you see. And that's where we get confused. And that's why it's so difficult for some people to see the ideas I'm talking about this evening. But these are real, real ideas. I mean, they're not just some theory. I can tell you countless times I have checked this out and found it to be true, not only in myself, but in many other people, and it bears out to be consistently true, provided you can be aware enough yourself of the selfishness of others and their overall ability to serve others. And to then choose not to by being selfish. Okay, that's a very important aspect, the relative nature of this question of how chi energy with sense energy can really screw us up if we're being selfish. All right, now you might say, well, isn't that chi energy also involved in other things? Yeah, feng shui. You've heard of that. Chi energy is all around us. It moves in and out of our bodies. It connects us to not only the forms inside our body, as I described, or inside our bodies, but also to things outside of our bodies. So if you're sitting in a chair, there's chi energy moving in and around and through the chair. How you relate to that chair actually has a small effect on the chair and on itself. If you have a bunch of chairs and a whole bunch of other things around you, then how you relate to those things and how you structure them in your environment so they can relate to each other and yourself has an effect on how the chi energy moves in and out of your body. And that is the science of feng shui, which has some effect on our natural health. You see what I'm saying? Wow, most people don't know that it's chi energy that is what feng shui is all about. Now, there's 9 ways to redirect the energy. I won't go into them tonight. And those 9 ways helps to rebalance the chi energy. Any room or environment we're in so that it goes in and out of our bodies with less, we'll say, friction and forces. The model that is used in those situations, and this includes clothing and includes all things, all forms around us, is the more that we make the environment so that it improves not just our senses, but the senses of everyone that enters the environment, the better the chi energy will be to us. And the improvement of the form is determined by improving the sense of ourselves and others, which is referred to as beauty. So the more beautiful an environment is made, the more the chi energy moves in and out of that environment and helps to improve our natural health. Isn't that cool? I think it is. That is really something. And so when people say, oh, I was in an ugly place and I feel sick, they're telling the truth. Most people don't recognize that there's a connection because they don't follow these principles that I'm talking about, and they don't understand them. Hopefully all of us tonight will be. That's what this show's about. Okay, so amazingly, if we want to improve the health of ourselves, we need to live in an environment that is relatively beautiful. And to improve the beauty, not just for our own sakes, but for everyone else's. Now you could say, well, why can't you just do it for yourself? Because then that's self-focused, and you may improve the amount of energy that goes into your body, but you won't let go of it. And so people who live in ostentatious beauty, they call it, but it isn't for the improvement of the objects or for the others around them. Remember, this has to improve others. Others is not just even people. It could be any form of life and inanimate things that we call mineral bases. But anything that improves the beauty overall is a good thing because it allows the energy to move freely in and out. But if we're doing it because we're hoarding, we're some kind of miser, and we have a lot of quote-unquote, what we call beautiful things, the environment is actually then uglified, not beautified. And the energy may go in, there may be a lot more energy in the environment, but it goes into us and doesn't go back out again. Because we're not serving anybody other than ourselves. And that produces more illness. So people who are miserly and steal or hold on to things and keep those things with no benefit, no thought of benefit in other people. They just want to have things, okay? Though those people from that environment make themselves ill. And I don't care. They can have every major, you know, kind of art form around them, which is usually art forms that are good art forms, produce excellent results in terms of producing beauty. But if it's for the wrong purpose, it actually will do the opposite and make people ill. Wow. You say, well, that's really wild. And it is. And you can prove this stuff to yourself by doing the things I'm saying. Remember, it can't just make your environment more beautiful. It has to be made for the purpose of others' benefits as well as your own. And it has to be for the benefit of the things in the environment. You want beauty to be there because all the things that share in the beauty are being balanced and improved upon. You're literally improving upon the life expectancy of forms themselves that you bring together in beauty. They will last longer, and they themselves will provide more healthy lives to everything else that is alive in and around them. Just incredible. All right. So, with this in mind, then, if we start accumulating a lot of what I call retained energies, then the result of retained energies is that some of the retained energy clogs up in one part of the body. But then we have an imbalance because the qi isn't working either. And consequently, there's areas of the body that are not getting enough energy. So both conditions are taking place. Areas that are starved for energy and areas that are just amazingly clogged with energy. The areas that are clogged with energy produce a condition the Chinese call heat. And that kind of heat produces oftentimes inflammation. It produces the inability for easy movement of, in some circumstances due to the inflammation. And it also causes destruction of tissue and cells. And it burns out, literally, the life expectancy of our cells. They actually don't last as long. Okay? And the areas that don't get much of the energies, either the sensory energies or the qi energy, become cold and brittle. And they tend to just literally slow down, reducing senses tremendously, causing huge amounts of mistakes, and oftentimes produce significant amounts of pain. Okay? So you have inflammation, which also can lead to pain on one side, and then you have pain like in areas that just can't move very well, like arthritic joints and other factors. And sometimes you end up with both. Now, how do you end up with both? Well, let's take the case of arthritic joints. The joint can't move, but every time that you want to move the joint, it becomes inflamed. And the inflammation also causes you not to want to move the joint because that causes more and more pain and heat. So you have a constant back and forth movement between this brittleness and cold and heat and inflammation going on in some diseases. These are oftentimes the chronic diseases that are in areas of our body that the body sacrifices to keep the most vital organs and places alive, and it ships a lot of this energy too. You have one minor center that is filled and clogged with energy, and a center very close to it that's another minor center that's starved for energy. And the whole thing gets way out of whack and produces a lot of symptoms of illness. Tremendous number of symptoms of illness come out of this relatively simple system that I'm describing for you this evening. Well, we're going to go ahead and go to a break right now. We're going to be back in, give or take, 2.5 minutes. And when we come back, I'll tell you a bunch more about principles of natural health.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about principles of natural health. And as I said in the last segment, the most critical principle, the foundation of the whole thing, is energy follows thought greater than its own. And we eventually got to the concept that chi, which is life energy, needs to be flowing through our bodies with unrestricted ability, and that the senses that provide information, which is a form of energy, into our bodies, that energy must also be able to be processed freely by our subconscious part of ourselves, which I'll call the personality, and sometimes, in more rare circumstances, directly even by ourselves. Sometimes when we pay real attention to something, strong attention, then we are conscious of the information that's coming in through a sense. In either one of those circumstances, if we're self-focused or selfish, we diminish our senses, we increase the amount of stress or forces in our bodies, and reduces our longevity and increases our likelihood of becoming ill. So, and the last thing I was talking about was that illness really turns into a circumstance where usually chronic ailments are created by energies going into one minor center that's excessive and into a kind of companion center. It may not be physically right next to it, but it's sort of close to it in similarity of the way that the energy is used in the body or used in the person's life. Then you have this kind of hot and cold situation where energy in one place is causing one problem and it causes another problem in another place. And sometimes the two places are very close to each other and sometimes they're very distant, but in either case, that produces illness and it's not a good thing. So the body gets out of balance and produces illness. Okay, so what can we do? I mean, let's face it, this is not a good situation. Most people, as they grow older, accumulate these energies and produce this either lack of energy in some centers and in other centers it's being filled to the brim with too much energy and it isn't doing anything. And what can we do about it? Well, the first thing is we need to recognize that one of the ways that the body lets us know that we're doing this is in some parts of it, it gives us a signal of pain. Now you can say, oh, pain, wow. Now, the other thing to remember here is that when a lot of energy is available for use by something that isn't us, we become a food basket for energies that are hostile to life and negative to life. We call those pathogens, and we call them diseases. And that's the thing that's so strange about this, is nothing really gets wasted in nature. If we're not going to use the energies in any proper way because we're selfish, well, something else will, be it a bacteria, a virus, a fungus, or possibly some kind of newfangled thing that they're coming up with. It could be our own cells going berserk and becoming cancerous, somewhat because they don't have the guidance of the principle. If the principles are lacking in our body and the chi energy is improperly handled, some of our cells no longer respond as though they're part of us. They start taking on their own deal. But they also lose their ability to correctly handle chi and informational energy and they become very, we'll say, freakish kinds of cells that also aren't connected to us, and we call that forms of cancer, malignancy. And they grow, that's where the word malignancy comes from. The way they grow is in very odd ways. It has nothing to do with the normal way our cells grow and support each other. These cells are extremely inefficient, but they spend almost all of their time and energy in self-growth because they are completely self-focused. So cancers, weird as it sounds, are some of the most selfish of all kinds of cells. Now, where in the heck did they come from? Well, they come from a person who's physically alive, usually, being very selfish in certain ways emotionally, and at the same time, developing a high amount of retained energy in some parts of their etheric, which is the electromagnetic parts of our bodies and our physical bodies, combined together. 90% of cancers go this way. And when they combine together, you get a cell that really is just like we are, but joined together between our astral nature and our physical nature. So they just want to only think about and care about their own growth, and they don't care if they're killing the host or destroying some other parts of the body around them. It doesn't matter to them. They may even enjoy it in some weird way. And their inefficiency, though, causes them to be weaker than normal cells, and so they have to take up a lot more of the resources of the body, which is the way they kill it so fast, requiring huge blood supplies, abnormal amounts of growth and death of their tissues, so the cells come and go like popcorn, and they almost never are able to organize themselves to do much of anything other than to create some kind of deadly blockage or metastasization, or they just have no good for nothing value. They don't produce anything. They don't do anything other than kill over time. And that comes from a certain kind of astral self-focus, which is a little hard to understand. I'll describe it, but I don't want to go too deep into it, but I thought it'd be interesting to talk about it. And that is that if a person feels a good deal of guilt and regret about things that they have done that have harmed other people, and they repress that energy. In other words, they say, no, I'm not going to think about that. I'd rather have a good time, forget about whether I'm hurting anybody else or have hurt anybody else. I want to know that. And while they're doing that business, at the same time, if they're living a very selfish physical life in general, then the two combine together to produce a condition in which the energy that we're joining in our physical body starts to relate to this repressed regret and self-destructive, we'll call it, thought process, like a desire for our own existence not to really be there anymore. So it's like a contradictory nature to ourselves that we want to live, we're afraid of death, but at the same time, because we regret but we're repressing all the things we've done wrong to each other, wrong to others, it causes us to feel in some ways like we don't deserve to or shouldn't be alive, physically alive. And this is weird, but it causes the condition then in some, well, by a lot of cases, vast majority of cancer cases, to develop into cancerous cells that ignore all the four ways that cancer is really prevented by cells in normal situations. And all the things that normally stop a cell from going in that direction, these cells then take on the quality of expressing the dislike for the body that they're in. It's a weird thing. They actually are hostile. They're not just neutral. They're actually hostile. Cancer is a disease that actually is against the self. So that's a tough one. Now, what about the 10% of the time that there's none of that component? well, then it's almost entirely just the selfishness of the person in relationship to the physical world, and oftentimes tied to various kinds of either viruses or we'll call it carcinogenic material. Now remember, in the astral conditions, you still have these carcinogenic issues, but the astral issue are more serious kinds of cancers because what they produce, they tend to produce things that are truly against the body, and they produce more quickly developing cancers that are sometimes much more difficult to treat. Although it is true that if you're exposed to high levels of certain kinds of radioactivity or certain kinds of poisons that are very hostile to the system, you can develop a pretty bad cancer from those that you may not survive from, and it may kill you. Strangely, though, radiation, unless it's extremely high, could take years to kill you from cancer, sometimes decades. Oddly, you might die a lot faster if you're going out and smoking and using drugs and being very selfish and abusing people around you, and certainly not being of service to people. That might actually kill you faster through some forms of cancer and create more serious problems in some people. This is a hard subject because, and the reason I'm starting with this is because it's one of the big mysteries. People say, well, why do some people get cancer and some people don't? Well, the other thing to remember here is that cancers do require most of the time some etheric and physical stimulus. So some people aren't around those things, and therefore they're less likely to get cancer in general. But some people also have extremely high levels of regret that they repress, and a guilt that they repress. They don't feel the guilt. They don't want to know about it. But those people, even with the most minor incidences of environmental issues, may come down with some very serious kinds of cancer. Yeah. Pretty weird, isn't it? That's a tough one to understand. Let's talk about some other principles of natural health. Well, in general, most people are concerned about things like aging in general. And I'll tell you this, based upon many, many years of observing and listening to what others are saying as well, it appears that the more a person gains in energy in the physical sense, which we call weight, the more they're going to be overall have a tendency towards selfishness that started the whole situation, and that continues. Now, I know that's a politically probably difficult subject for me to address, because what I'm really saying then is that people who are overweight tend to be selfish. And I know that that's difficult to understand, because everybody says, what about the congenial fat person that is trying to help everybody else? Well, maybe they are. And maybe there are some people who do that. I'm talking about only averages here. The more weight a person has on them, the more retained energy they've accumulated. And that only takes place because the person is self-focused. We are all selfish to some level. I'm just saying that the more weight you gain, the more selfish you're being in your life. So the best thing is to both reduce weight and focus out. And interestingly, the two go hand in hand. Recently, I've been on kind of a diet, and the results have shown to me that if you don't focus out, you don't lose any weight. No matter what else you do, you have to focus out. And if you become upset, emotional, which is really selfish in an astral sense, the chances of losing weight diminish. Now, is it true that some people get emotionally upset? Well, that's true, and they may lose weight because they stop eating. Well, that could be true too. But that's a different fact. And then it's an exception to what I just said, because if you don't eat enough of the right foods and the right nutrients, you're not showing love towards your body or bodies. You're not being a spiritual person, because that a spiritual person treats their bodies as all those bodies have, and they do, a life of their own, and they need to be taken care of. And so people who eat in malnutrition ways, who pay attention in wrong ways to diet, even if they're not fat, they may be very thin, they may also suffer equally from the concept of a lack of energy in centers, more often than a retained energy in centers. And then they have a lot of the diseases associated with that sort of problem. So people who are heavy tend to have more of the expression of disease in the retained energy column. And the people who are, we'll say, indifferent and selfish towards their bodies in ways that produce a lack of nutrients have a usually different kind of set of illnesses inside of them. And as far as aging is concerned, it has been discovered that people age more who are overweight. And generally, people who are slightly underweight by normal standards do a bit better in terms, in general average terms, than the rest of the folks. But that little bit better is probably only in the sense that they don't age as quickly, at least in the middle of life. But towards the end of life, it could be quite fatal for them. So you don't want to be out of balance on either side of this equation, because in the long run, on either side, it will create some negative results. So just how much a person weighs tells us something, and maybe more than we care to recognize because of the political issues involved, about how they're living their life in terms of being focused out in relationship to their ability to respond. Remember, it is a comparison between the two. It isn't an absolute number. It's relative. And that's a big deal. And even if a person who is significantly overweight or significantly underweight is doing relatively kind and good and loving things in their life, they would do even more, far more, in a very much more responsible way, a higher level, if they were to maintain their weight in a normal amount for them. And now that I probably have gotten a lot of people upset, because, I mean, weight is a big factor for at least some people in the United States and countries like the United States, where people tend to not only overeat, but they tend to eat bad things, things that aren't good for them. And so that creates all kinds of issues. It's our choice what we eat and should never be up to others. All this needs to be based upon our freely chosen system of how to live so that we become the best that we can be, not someone else telling us what to do or how to do it. So I'm not telling people that they have to lose weight, but I'm saying that if you choose to, you'll become more aware and more conscious in the process. The chi energy will flow through you more easily, and you should live longer as well and be healthier in the process of life. We can't look at life expectancy as being the only part of the equation. And the reason for that is that in some circumstances, there's also karmic factors and other ways that people, other things that enter into natural health, which I'll talk about in a few minutes, besides these relatively mechanical ones. And so, a person can live longer but not be healthy. They can live a very unhealthy, longer life. And maybe even live as long as the average or beyond the average, but be quite unhealthy. That's not a good outcome, in my opinion, but the alternative doesn't seem to be much better, which is to die early. Okay, so what is the cause then of this kind of strange effect of some people living long lives but unhealthy lives? What also is the principles of natural health that goes deeper and has more, is a more, we'll say, nuanced factor in understanding metaphysically whether or not we're going to be healthy or not? And let me say this, that in general, not only living responsibly and using what we have to serve others is probably the biggest and most important credo, but not only is that the only thing that matters, there are other factors that come into play. Who you choose to co-serve with, besides God, becomes a factor. Now you can say, well, wait a second. Now you're saying I'm going to be healthy or unhealthy based upon who I know and what kind of friends I have and what they do. And the answer is, yep. I believe strongly in the individual nature of human beings. There's no question about that. However, if you decide to, no matter what you understand about everything I've said in this show so far and even follow, if you decide to live your life with people who totally ignore all the principles I just said, who are some of the selfish, most selfish people relative to their level of responsible, conscious positions, and who do terrible things throughout their life, and who live a life of non-beauty, ugliness, you will be affected by them. Now, why is that the case? Because they are part of the form that you surround yourself with. Remember, the chi energy is not just going in and out of yourself. It's going in and out of them. So if you choose to be around unhealthy people, you will become unhealthy. Now, a lot of people are going to say, well, that's the allopathic model. If you're around sick people, you're going to catch the disease from them. No, you don't catch the disease from them. You catch the bad chi energy. And you also diminish your own senses because their senses are low. And so you tend to fall to the level of those you associate with in sense. And there are other factors that come into play, too, because the sense produces knowledge, by the way. And you keep your knowledge levels consistent with the people you associate with. So that's what. So you're basically designing yourself to be at a sense level of people around you. So this is a critical element. Now, it's not because you're going to catch the disease. It's because you invite it to be part of yourself through their own levels of consciousness, their own levels of awareness, their own relative level of selfishness, and their own lack of beauty in the way they treat their environment and their senses within it. Wow. Now that's a whole other wrinkle on this system. And it's why we in the Western world, with our logical thinking apparatus, came to the faulty conclusion that diseases are caught from other people who happen to be sick around us. Well, if you do not think like those people, if you are there serving them, if you are there truly as a person acting with your level of responsibility, you likely will not catch the disease that they have, even though you are in direct contact with them. That's hard to understand, I know. Some doctors have come to realize this that are in practice and treat sick people, that they get sick when they're being selfish in their life. And when they're doing their service, and even which may include being a doctor or a nurse, they don't get sick. Isn't that fascinating? They just don't get sick. And I know that there's going to be people that will say, but that's not science. This is, of course it is science. Science can be determined by truth, and truth can be determined by a concept that explains it. I'm giving you a concept bigger than the one that's used right now. The allopathic model is a concept that's extremely new, and it obviously is disproved all the time in people's lives. That's why so many people turn away from it, because it isn't true in totality. Yes, you can get sick from sick people that you're around, especially if they're friends of yours or if you knew them, and you're not serving them, but you're just taking from them the way they're taking from you. You'll share those illnesses all the time. But if you are in service, either to them or with them, or just that you're with others that you're paying attention to, and they just happen to be ancillary to the situation, the chances of getting sick are actually relatively low. Relatively low. Now, in intimate situations, when two humans or more get together and are intimate with each other, I'm not talking about just sexuality, but any kind of intimate situation, and both people are equally selfish, the chances of getting a disease are extremely high. Consequently, venereal diseases are rampant, and some of them are very bad, because you have this equality of consciousness and sense between people, usually when they are being sexual with each other. Ah, I see, said the blind man, as the old saying goes. And I thought it fits in pretty good with this concept. Yeah, that's how it works. And there are a lot of examples of this if we all were to check this out. So I don't ask you to believe the things I say. I ask you, hopefully, to just do your own study. Use these concepts as a means to challenge the ideas and see how true they are. And then let me know and let others know whether or not what I'm saying is an accurate depiction of the world around us. Is it really like that? All right, let's take a little bit of a break here. I'm kind of putting out a whole bunch of information, which I think is great. I want to get as much out in the show as possible. I don't want people to go to sleep, and I don't want to burn out your brains. But I do want to give as much as possible within the couple hours we have together. Now, here's the deal. All right? Tomorrow, I'm going to be, that's April 23rd, over at Healthy Habit Health Foods. Let's go say it again. Healthy Habit Health Foods. A little strange name. A little hard to say. Okay. HHH. But it's going to be a seminar and workshop in which people get to talk with me. And we'll discuss some things for about an hour and a half to 2 hours about natural health. It's going to be different than tonight's show because I'm not going to have the time to talk about all these principles. I'm going to go through them much more quickly. But there's going to be a more hands-on kind of, we'll say, place where people will be able to talk about some of their experiences and also come up with maybe some answers in their own lives and for those that they care about and even those that they don't even know. Maybe they have a professional background that leads them to understanding this stuff. And this will be a great way for all of those folks to get somewhere. Seating is a little limited. I'm not sure the exact number. I know it's over 50, and I think it's under 100. So you do the math. I don't know how many people are going to show up, but I was told by the store last week that a lot of people are coming. So whatever. Please come. Please come. If it turns out you can't find a seat, we'll find some way to deal with that. I'm not going to turn anybody away. I don't know what we'll do exactly, but we'll go out in the street and talk there or something. But we'll figure something out. And if you're in the Phoenix area, this is going to be in Phoenix. I'm going to give the address. It is 6029 North 7th Street. That's in Phoenix. And if you want to call the store, you can, 602-252-6000. To find out, you know, where they are, in case you forgot how to get there or you don't know, whatever. And if you can't make it, then in either case, I hope tonight's show will also be of some value because this is really an important subject for a lot of people. Everybody that I know of is going to eventually die and is aging. Death and aging are two different things. I'm going to cover that in this show tonight, but the point is that most people are aging. If you're not aging, you're not a human anymore. But but you might be a person of some sort. And if you're no longer aging, you have joined your senses and center together into beauty, into one great beauty. Your bodies are all joined into a great beauty. And you're in full service all the time. You serve others all the time, 100% of the time. Then aging means nothing. And all the things we're talking about, illness, are not part of your existence, of course. But it is an opportunity to, for all of us, to look ahead. At some point, probably not in this lifetime for most people, we will be there. And we will enter into the next kingdom of superhumanists where we're not plagued by diseases or by infirmities, or and we won't have any accidents, and we will, in the three lower worlds where humans have a body in, those bodies will not age, but they will be defined by how we choose to have those bodies represented at any one time in service to others. So you may even look older or younger to some people because that's what they need, but not because you're old or young, but because that's how you choose to represent yourself. And that's what some of these people we call masters do. They don't live among us as they live among themselves, but they function at times, rarely these days, in concert with or interacting with a few human beings. Okay, so getting back to this question of life and death. Then if we don't grow older, even if we were to perfect our bodies, then why is it true that we eventually would die? In other words, we can't keep a certain kind of body going forever. The body we have certainly cannot. And the reason is that the energies that are in our bodies, if we're loving and caring about those energies, they need a rest. And they can stay around. And we're told that the number is 147 years. I don't know if that's exact, but that's what I hear. You can hang around for that long a time, 147 years. It's three periods of 49 years each, which is a whole other show. And if you stay in pure service during that time, that body will not age. It could grow to be about 25, give or take, years old, 27 actually, but and it'll look like that throughout the time that you have that body or use it. But eventually, you would give up the body on a volunteer basis and say, "Well, I'll make a new one," because the energy in this body needs to have a rest. Now, some people say, well, isn't the energy going in and out, so why do you have to exchange it? Well, that's somewhat true. But even if you're a biologist, you know this to be true, too, that eventually we run out of stem cells, both adult and infant stem cells. And when we run out of these stem cells, we run out of the patterns that keep the energies able to recycle. Now, I'm going to tell you a little secret. The reason we only have a limited number of stem cells is to prevent us from ever living longer, in a productive way at least, past 147 years. If you do the math, you'll find out, if you're a biologist and know what I'm talking about, that that's about how long we can be expected to live without putting new stem cells in, which right now we can't do. And if we could do it, I wouldn't recommend it. Better thing to do is, if we can really put new stem cells in and do all that stuff, is just create a whole new body and move our consciousness into that body instead of trying to keep the old one going. There's other problems and reasons not to keep the old one going besides just a question of the stem cell problem. There are factors about the way our cells grow, divide, etc., that we do not know yet. And I think I know them. And I'm not permitted to tell things like this over the air or even to others, because science hasn't discovered these things yet. And when I say permitted, it's not wise for me to do that. It's better that we discover all this stuff on our own, and me try to explain things that probably still nobody's going to believe me about anyway, but even if they do, it's better that we develop the technologies, understand it ourselves, so we won't abuse them as we might if we haven't gone through all the efforts to fully discover them ourselves. So that's the reason I'm not revealing this, but there are things about the way the cells work that are presently unknown that have a governing factor to prove this issue that you don't want the cell living past a certain point, which will be in an absolute sense is 147 years, but in reality, because of other factors, when a human being lives here, no matter how unselfish they are connected to other people. Unless all the people they're connected to are at or above their own consciousness, or at least at their own consciousness, there is some degree of forces produced in their body. And that cuts down from 147 to maybe 120 or 110, the rate that a person can live. And if people are acting out around you, and even if you're co-serving, they can cut that way down. So if they're doing things that are really selfish at times, even though they're supposed to be serving all the time, sometimes they serve, sometimes they don't. When they don't, if you're connected to them, that could be, again, cause you to suffer diseases and to age and to die. Okay, now death is a totally different issue. Death is just giving up the body. And death can be voluntary, where you're in control. That's what happens with more advanced people who are close to or are these master kinds. Or death, as it is with most people, is involuntary, and people are not, for the most part, in control of it. Oh, they can try to prevent it for a few years here and there from happening, but ultimately it will prevail. So death is giving up the body. Aging is not taking correct care of the body. They're very different. There is a connection, obviously, but they're not the same thing. And people get confused about that. Of course they do. It's always understandable that people might get confused about something like that. But nonetheless, that's the way it works. And the ideal way to die is on a voluntary basis. Most people will not have that luxury, but they still can plan their life as though they're going to die at a certain time. And strangely, or maybe not so, because energy follows thought, not too far from that time is when they'll actually go. So we are in control of it, even if we don't want to say it's truly conscious on our part. Okay, some other things about illness that we want to cover. That I talked about cancer, and I talked about some of the chronic factors. But let's talk about other kinds of illness so we have a better understanding of really what the principles are about in health. When someone gets a headache, when someone has an issue that is painful, it's because our body is trying to tell us that too much energy or too little energy is in a particular location. And oftentimes, these are exchanging with each other. One area has too much, another area has too little. The difference between those two areas produces something called tension. Tension is very different than pain alone. The pain comes from either one of the two areas, not either having enough energy or having too much. That's what causes the pain. There are certain kinds of energies called devonic energies. Those are the energies that are more conscious. And unlike the energies that just gravitate and want to stick around, these divine energies are really care about us. They care about the body and its workings. They are like the two gatekeepers, the two helpers inside of us. And some of them are, of these divine energies, are the part of us that transmits information about pain. When they tell us there's too much energy or they say there's too little energy, we feel pain. That's the signal that we feel. They tell it in a lot of different ways, 8 different ways, if you're into Chinese medicine. And each one of those ways is a different kind of pain that they send the message of. So we have these different ways of noticing the nature of the pain itself, which tells us a lot about the nature of the problem we're experiencing. Is it an accident? Is it an illness? Is it chronic? Is it acute? We get all kinds of different signals from these things. Now, when you take medicine that's allopathic, it tries to deal with the demonic energies by shutting them down. It says, okay, I don't want to have the pain coming through. Got the message. Thank you very much. Now you guys go to sleep. And you take a pain medication that tends to either block the message. If it blocks the message, it may be acetaminophen, or in some cases, some of the anti-inflammatories, including, sometimes in the ways that some of the anti-inflammatories act, it may be, you know, like something like Advil. You've heard of that. So those kinds of drugs tend to block the message, forestall it to some extent, and they do it by blocking it before it gets to the part of us that records it. It's okay, but they don't do it for very long, and if they keep blocking it, then that area of the body is harmed. Like acetaminophen blocks it through parts, centers that are in or around the liver, and in some cases, other areas, and then fortunately, Advil does it in the stomach. So Advil causes ulcers in the stomach, and acetaminophen causes almost look like ulcers, but another kind of problem in the liver. And so these things, you can't just take them indefinitely to block the pain because they have side effects caused by how they're blocking. Okay, that's one form of pain reliever for kinds of diseases we have or illnesses or accidents we have. But another kind that's allopathic is a narcotic or in that general class of drugs. And what those drugs do is they tend to try to get the demonic energies to go to sleep. Like, okay, you guys got all that energy down there, no problem, got the message, but I'm going to shut you down. Now, you can use a narcotic for a very short period of time because as soon as it wears off, the demonic energy says, hey, you didn't hear me, and then it puts out more pain after it wears off. So every time you use a narcotic, it seems like it's less and less effective. That isn't true. What's really happening is a demonic energy is saying, hey, did you hear me? And it shouts it. And then you think that, oh, I'm adapting to the drug. Well, you are in a way adapting, but what you're really doing is the drug is doing the same thing, but the demonic energy is more insistent. And you're teaching it to be increasingly insistent, so your pain will only increase over time. And eventually it won't shut down the demonic energy. And no matter how much you take of the narcotic, you may still experience different levels of pain. So you see, that's not a good thing. And the worst part about it is that because the narcotic does the same thing that the retained energy is doing in your body in the first place, it decreases your senses. So the problem is that the thing that you need is heightened sense, so you have this heightened awareness and you can do something about the pain. The narcotic decreases your sense, so you may not improve or change the problem that is causing the pain. And that's another secondary thing that makes the whole thing worse, because you're not fixing the problem and you're ignoring it on top of it. So that's even worse. So I don't like those kinds of things. You might think differently. What are the answers for this, if we're doing natural healing? Well, the answer is what I've talked about in prior shows about this, the nature of this particular problem, and that is to use herbs. Herbs that supply the body with the nutrients and ingredients that it needs to get the chi energy flowing again. That's the glue that's holding together the informational energy that we're being selfishly doing. And it also does something else. If a person's aware enough and conscious enough to use the herbs properly, then they are also starting to be less selfish. You might say, well, they're doing it for their own bodies. Well, yeah, but the body is not us. And in a way, there's something to be said about trying to truly help the body by using herbal medicines and other kinds of medicines that are not connected to or with drugs. And so that's a really good thing because it tends to then improve the problem rather than to make the problem worse. You're actually doing what we'll call curing. Some curing is going on. The other thing that the herbs do, though, is they start to redistribute the energy. So you're curing the nature of the problem by reestablishing a balance and getting the chi energy to flow, but you're also redistributing the informational energy that came through the senses and was misused back to the proper places. Then suddenly your awareness goes way up because now all this information that was missing and clogged in you is suddenly there. You suddenly become more knowledgeable, to say the least. And at the same time, you're decreasing the pain because once you redistribute the energy, there's no reason for the divine energies to be screaming and saying, hey, I'm in pain, it's terrible, I've got all this energy down here, or I don't have enough energy. Remember, some areas are the cold part of the Chinese system, and they don't have enough energy. And so they're going to get more energy that's going to come from the areas that have too little energy. They have too much energy. And it's the systems is going to balance out. The good news is that once the qi energy moves flows through us and goes out of our body, comes back in and out, our environment will improve because we'll pay more attention to it, we'll beautify ourselves and our environment in the process, and we'll become naturally more loving, we'll become more conscious overall. So herbs help us do that. They don't make us do it. We still have to focus out. And I want to be real clear about this. You can take all every natural remedy, including the ones that I am associated with or help to make, and those herbs will do you no good if you're selfish. And particularly if you get more selfish and you take them, you say, well, I'll take these because that way I could even steal more, I could be no good more, I could lie and do a cheat and do all this more stuff. Well, guess what? The herbs are going to do absolutely nothing for you. Most likely you'll take them and say, well, this thing didn't work for me. So, and again, for the people who take some of the stuff we make, and if it doesn't work for you, I'm not condemning you with the fact that, well, you must be selfish. There could be other factors. But in general, that's the truth. I know that's another politically not so nice thing to say, like I said earlier in the show about fat people. But it's the truth. It's the truth. And it wasn't just about fat people. It's also people who are undernourished and underweight. But it's the truth. If you aren't treating your body correctly, then you aren't living your life correctly, and you're producing the illnesses that are going to plague you. And remember, there's no way around it. You can't ignore it because eventually you will lose the ability to use your senses and then your body, and then you'll die. Not a way, good way to go. So there are answers, but the answers need to be understood and not some kind of, well, take this and call me in the morning kind of thing, because that's not going to work. If it did, we would have solved this whole problem a long time ago, and we haven't, have we? Health is a big issue. At the present time in the United States, people are spending huge amounts of money and time and suffering and having numerous accidents and other problems. All the accidents are part of the health problem. It's all part of the sense problem. All that's happening because we're selfish. Change the selfishness, you change the health. And that happens because, again, at the bottom of the whole thing, energy follows thought greater than its own, like we talked about at the beginning of the show. That's how it is. And it's a principle that is so, so profound and so pervasive and, we'll say, almost impossible to change, that if you ignore it, you do so at your own peril, which almost certainly will be perilous. Okay, so what are the things? I mentioned about pain, and again, this isn't a show about that, so I'm not going to go any deeper into it, but what other things can we do in terms of treating ourselves using natural healing methods Well, anything that moves energy in the body in accord with and, we'll say, helping the chi, moves both the chi energy, therefore, simultaneously or almost simultaneously with the informational energy coming through centers, anything that does that is considered a curative source. Now, what are curative sources? They can be anything from the smells of things, from aromatherapy, to the visual cues from a beautiful environment, including going off into the woods somewhere, et cetera, to immersing ourselves in with people who are loving and caring, et cetera. Because remember, we talked about that, that the people around us have an amazing effect on us. That's where the allopathic model erroneously got all this idea that we catch things from people. And then, in addition, if we eat the right foods and use the right kind of herbs and other kinds of natural remedies, we can, almost like as good as any surgeon can, change our bodies and change the illnesses that are presently plaguing us and produce a state of natural health. Natural health comes from natural ways of living and not from taking drugs and not from going to some medicine man or shaman to do it for us. Now, I know a lot of people are going to say, wow, what's wrong with shamanic, this or that? No, that, I'm not saying that you can't do it, except that those folks use the same thing. If you go to a legitimate shaman, that shaman, besides supposedly trying to work on your consciousness through direction of your spirit and getting your spirit to become less, we'll call it, joined with matter and form, that's one of the things they do, they also will have you go off on a walk in the woods, or maybe go and wade in the lake, or swim. Or they might have you do some kind of exercises similar to yoga. They might have you actually do a form of yoga that is consistent with their type of medicine. They may also use acupressure. They may use dance. They may use guided imagery and storytelling. They may have you speak to others. And they may also put you on a journey of service, which is really important. All of those things are part of natural healing because they all deal with the same things that I have already brought up. They're just technologies, if you want to call it that, some of them very ancient, for dealing with these things. And that includes herbal medicines. Same thing. All of it are means to find health. Now, some people prefer the more darker side of these kinds of questions, taking some kind of hallucinogenic and having some one, claiming that they are a spiritual person, maybe say certain kind of incantations or use some kind of ritual to just cure us. That's kind of like voodoo, but which wouldn't be inclusive in that. There's also less, we'll say, severe forms of it. Those kinds of things I don't recommend. And why don't I recommend? Because they're not balanced. They don't look at form and spirit as being imbalanced. And they attempt to usually deal more with the form and less with the spirit. And that's always a troublesome thing because it will tend to make people sicker in the long run. It may produce brief periods of improvement and fool someone into thinking, I found the answer. All I have to do is go to this guy and this woman and they'll do this to me. That's not the answer because in the long term, it will enhance the ailment or it will convert it into something far more serious and more deadly. That's even more likely to happen. And so these are not the things I suggest. If someone practices them, they may get very temporary and short-term what they'll think of as results, with very long-term serious life crises and drawbacks. Because it's making you more selfish. And its selfishness is the cause of disease. You see? Okay. So, what are the other methods of natural healing that in some ways are coming, let's say? They're the future of our world, I think. Okay. The first is the science of Bai Qi, I call it. The interesting thing about herbal medicines is that they are used by traditional modes of application. Someone has a certain series of symptoms, and you use certain herbs in a certain way because it's been proven for most people it helps those symptoms, and they usually get better. Nothing wrong with that. Traditional herbal medicine has its place. But in Fai Qi, the difference is that we're looking at it more scientifically. How do you change the movement of energy from 370, give or take a few centers in a person's body, and they change from if you're a man or a woman, so it's not the same number in each, and compared to the seven major chakras, and you have to know what each herb does and then use combinations, many, many of them, more than most traditional herbals use. I'm talking about dozens to hundreds, to try to balance the body in a unique way that that person needs in some circumstances, or make a formula that works on like 80, 90% of the people who use it for certain kinds of class of conditions. That's all possible to do with the science of Fai Qi. They're different, though. In one case, you're making a one-of formula for an individual, which may harm other people. And in the other case, you're making a formula that works in the general class of kinds of ailments that people have for most people. And that's what we do when we make something commercially. But if I'm doing something for someone that's special, or for maybe someone I know close to or myself, that's a different thing because I'm using then the unique things that that specific person needs. Sometimes you have to use, therefore, less ingredients. But it has to be really carefully formulated in the amounts because it's too attuned to that one person's body. Nonetheless, it's a good thing. Bai Qi is a new science, truly. It's combining some elements of Chinese medicine, Indian medicine, and some other Eastern kinds of medicines with the concept now that the electromagnetic energies in our physical body and somewhat connected to some other energies in our other bodies is we're able to change those by using the electromagnetic energies of the herbs and nutraceuticals themselves, which alters the way the energy is moving through us. It still requires some participation on the person's part because you still have, in those situations, you have the qi to be concerned about. I'll give you an example of what I'm saying. Let's say someone comes to us and says, well, I'm going to try some Fai Qi Jizik. I've been getting some bad headaches recently. Is it going to cure my headache? We usually say, well, probably 90% chance or better it's going to cure your headache. But depending upon how severe your headache is, that determines how much you have to take and how often. And you want to take a lot in the beginning and less the next few times you take it. Because you have to, it's sort of like a momentum thing. You want to get the inertia going, and to get it moving at first, you got to take more, and then you take less as you need it. It's a good way of putting it. And it works pretty good that way. But here's the problem, okay? So the person that we're talking about is unusually selfish in some ways in their life, and at this particular juncture in their life, they're being very selfish. Then they take the Fai Qi Jizik, and they get either side effects or no effect at all. And they say, oh, this stuff doesn't work. We say, well, here's your money back. Sorry it didn't work. Hopefully it might in the future. If you want to try it some other time, it's okay. And that's the reason for that, is that they are literally fighting the fact that these ingredients are trying to move the energy in their body. And some people subconsciously, now remember this energy is mostly being dealt with subconsciously by personalities, they don't want to get better. I know that sounds crazy. If they're taking the 5-Chi, don't they want to get rid of the pain? Well, they want to get rid of the pain, but what they don't want to do is they don't want to get rid of the selfishness. And there's an odd change here that I have to talk about. When you take 5-Chi formulas, regardless of which one it is, it tends to make you less selfish unless you fight it. And some people actually do that. They fight being less selfish, being more loving. They fight it. And then they're also fighting the benefit of the formula at the same time. It's so strange. It's so remarkably strange. And those kinds of people may have to take enormous amounts for very protracted periods of time to even get minimal results because they're being selfish and they're fighting. They're fighting the change in their consciousness that the formula is trying to help come about. That's the problem. So we actually have a subconscious element of rejection of using the science of 5-Chi in some people. Now, am I again saying that everybody it doesn't work on has this issue? No, I'm not. There are other factors that come into play. You can have other, you may need something different than what's in that formula. It only works for 90, 95% of the people. What if you're in the 5 to 10% it doesn't work for? Huh? It doesn't work for you. It could still help you in other ways, so try it. And it may work after a while as well, because we don't know for sure whether it's the selfishness problem, that the energy is really stuck badly problem, or that it's just not the appropriate formula. You just don't know until you use it for a while. That's part of the problem. And once it works on you, it probably will continue to. So that's not a problem for most people. In other words, one of the things we've noticed is that if it works, it usually works most of the time. But if you're being particularly selfish at a particular time, that may not be true. So it might work yesterday because you were really out, focused out and serving and being loving others. And today you're being no good and hostile and resistant to helping, etc. And then it doesn't work. Look at the mirror, and you'll get your answer. Okay. So 5-Chi Jizik is, and the science of 5-Chi is really a whole different way of looking how we can treat ourselves. Is it something that's easy to learn, though, because you have to understand all these centers and trying to formulate a formula. It's very difficult to do. But using it is relatively easy, and even prescribing it for people to use isn't all that hard. It's just that making a darn formula, because it's so complicated, it's like having multiple chess games going on in your mind at the same time, figuring out if I move this, move what happens here, and it's even computers couldn't do it, I don't think. It takes great consciousness and the understanding of the limitations and the attempt to do it in a way that reaches as many people as possible or is most effective for the one individual you're making it for. That's the whole thing. That's the key to making it work. Now, I can tell you this. We've tried this on animals, and it works on animals, so we know it's not a psychosomatic issue. We have a dog. When I say we, the group I'm a member of, has a dog. I have a couple dogs. On one dog, some formula that we came up with worked not so great. But the problem with that dog is that every day it's dying. It's in its last month or two of life. And so the things you treat it for, one day you have different things going on in the next day. It's the same as treating a dying person, maybe in a hospice situation. It's very difficult to do much with that person because they're in a state of dying, you're continuously changing very rapidly, usually downhill, of course. And so all these methods that we're talking about require some level of stability in the body. And if there's no stability, you can't count on them being very effective, and they may cause a lot of side effects as well. The other little dog we have has the most deadly form of cancer he could ever have and should have died about, give or take, a year ago. But we came up with a formula and some natural healing methods that you would think that this little dog is completely healthy. It's not totally well yet, but most of the cancer has been defeated. And this is the worst kind. This is the kind that when you reach the stage the dog was at, which was when it was diagnosed, it was actually stage 4, no one lives. Everybody does. Human, dogs, doesn't matter, cats. They get this disease, they're all dead. And usually very quickly. It's the same disease if you had, say, cancer of the pancreas. Cancer of the pancreas is this adenocarcinoma, which is extremely aggressive and very, very dangerous. And in dogs, it goes 6 times faster than it does in humans. So if a human would last 6 weeks, the dog lasts 1. The human would last 3 months, the dog lasts 2 weeks. It's like that. So it's terrible. And it's an extremely fatal disease. At the level, at the stage that we started doing something about it. And the reason you can't do anything much earlier than that is because dogs can't tell you, well, I got this pain or I feel this. By the time you notice all the symptoms, it's really too late to do anything. But one of the things that's so interesting about this is because these creatures, these wonderful, loving creatures, are not suggestive. You can't say, well, here, I'm giving you this, and it'll make you better. Or they don't even know what you're doing to them. If they dramatically improve, you know that what you're doing is the right thing. And I'm not advocating experimenting on animals to make them sick to do this. What I think is we should experiment on animals that are sick and try to cure them and then use that as a model, et cetera. I don't believe in the rats that we're killing wantonly. We should just be saving all animals that we can, and we can learn just as much that way, and then also learn things by not creating drugs through destructive methods and killing things and torturing things. It's inhumane, and it's inhumane towards animals, and animals eventually become, over time, their group souls become human souls and create human beings. So it's a great concern that we do these things, these awful things. Okay, so let's talk about the last area I'm probably going to get to tonight, and that is that if we're going to increase our life expectancies and live in ways that almost eliminates disease, we're going to need to live in ways collectively. Because remember, disease comes from all those that were around. So we can't just live on to ourselves someplace unless we're totally hermits, and that would be selfish. So we're going to have to change our world, and especially the places we live in right now, to be much more spiritually loving, much more with people in service, and try to help those that are doing so by us doing the same and helping everyone else around to be doing the same, living, as I call it, as souls. Because you can't eradicate disease and increase life expectancy and to make ourselves truly healthy if we don't work together. Now, I'm not saying that you have to go join some spiritual group right away, etc. All I'm suggesting is that your life is interconnected with everyone else's. Your health is as well, and you need to co-serve with those people on some way that is equal to your ability to respond. Now, if you're really a spiritual person, you have great abilities and great gifts, you should be working with others who are doing the same. And then I am recommending that you find a spiritual group of people doing it. But if that isn't your calling right now, if that isn't where you're at, okay, then at least with the people that you do know and that you do function with, live a life of compassion and love. Live a life of service at the level that you can be responsible for and you can be helpful towards others. Sacrifice to the level that is your ability to respond. And live that life, and you will dramatically see improvement in your life. Yes, you you can try Tai Chi, sciences, and you can try all the other things you talked about, Michelle. But that's the one thing that's going to change this element of energy following thought in your own body to be a method of living healthy. That's the way that you're going to end up with spending most of your money and life on service to others, where the joy of life is through the meaning you get in creating a world of God, a world of creation with God, and a virtuous planet, a virtuous place to be, and a beautiful place to be as well. This needs to be what the focus of all of our lives are. Living a life of beauty is an incredible thing. Right now, the world is filled with a great deal of ugliness. The third ray going out makes the world extremely ugly because we're all so selfish through this throat chakra. And it increases the diseases connected with the throat chakra and its opposite, which is the solar plexus area. And these diseases start going up tremendously in countries and in areas where we are excessively selfish. An example would be the Japanese, who have excessive amounts of stomach cancers and other illnesses, including ulcers, etc. And some people think it's their diet, but really it's not. It's not. And then in terms of lung ailments, which all are connected to the third ray, lung ailments are terrible. Of course, obviously brought on by smokers, but not everybody has lung problems. Anything from emphysema to cancer to asthma to, even believe it or not, allergies are connected to this whole thing, and a lot of other stuff. They're all part of this third ray issue, and they're part of our problems in the age that we live in right now. And it has a lot to do with the world being a very dark, evil, ugly place, getting worse at this time. Do everything you can to make it better. Do everything you can to reveal and show evil and darkness so that we can see it and change it. Don't be shy. Don't be hesitant. Be brave and bold and let others know so that they can join in with us. And when we work together against those things and for beauty and for a great planet and a great world, health by nature will improve. And truly, the word natural health will take on a totally, totally different kind of meaning than just, well, I'm just going to go to the herb store and buy a bottle of vitamin C and this and that, or take some ginkgo. No, it's going to mean something totally different. It's going to mean about a whole lifestyle change, a whole attitude change, a whole change in who and what and why we are. That's the real message in living a life, and living a life and finding the principles involved in that, in natural health. I hope this made some sense to you tonight. Yep, we are reached that point. We are out of time. Well, until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.